You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Thought we'd probably never get a sequel to, because why would you even think, yeah, there'll be a sequel to that someday? The Last Detail is not the one I imagined us getting a sequel to. And which I don't think anybody else did either.
Which this technically isn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be.
No. It technically isn't, but we can get into that in a moment. And I know it's technically not a sequel, because Richard Linklater told me it's not a sequel.
Right. I mean, like I said, it stands all by itself, but you also could totally... I mean, it also fits into saying, like, okay, this could be the same characters from that movie many years later.
We'll get into
why technically it's not.
Okay.
In the bulk of the review.
It is not surprising, though, that he had the script sitting around for 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
And realizing nobody's going to want to make this movie.
No.
And it wasn't until, like, Amazon goes, we want to work with you on something. And he's like, oh, this is in my desk. And they're like, yeah, let's do that.
We are, of course, talking about...
Oh, Last Flag Flying.
The latest film from Richard Linklater.
Indeed.
Which I will explain why this is not technically a sequel.
So you've said.
Sequel to that. Because what happened was that Darryl Ponickson, who wrote... Darryl Ponickson, I always get that wrong.
Yeah.
Who wrote the original novel and script for The Last Detail, went back and did a sequel to the novel in 2005, and then started working on adapting it with Linklater. And Linklater went, look, we can't do a sequel film to The Last Detail, not least because we can't get the rights. But everything you deal with in the story, we really want to talk about. So, you know, let's basically evolve it so it's different characters, there's enough clear blue water. You know, it's very definitely a spiritual successor, that it's thematic, and Ponickson was on board through the script writing process as well. So...
Spiritual sequel. Even though, like I said, once again, I mean, the names are the same. You could totally...
No, they're not. None of the names are the same.
Oh, you're right. Larry is, though.
I cannot
say... Steve Carell's character is the same as Randy Quaid's character.
No.
They're both Larry.
They're both Larry, and that's the only thing. All the names are different.
Well, either way, in your head, you can say, this is a sequel to The Last Detail, and it totally is a sequel to The Last Detail. regardless of what the lawyers say. Yeah, regardless of what... Yeah, a key phrase, regardless of what the lawyers say. Basically, this is, you know, this many years after the events of The Last Detail, which are basically two Navy men who are ordered to escort a guy who's being put into the brig for quite a few years, and they have to take him to D.C. for it, and they realize this kid is so young. Let's show him a good time. This kid has never had a good time. I mean, he was given a trial for stealing $40.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. Okay. And it was, like, not that big a deal. So it was like they sort of bond with this kid along the way. So this is all these years later, and under the impression that it is indeed a sequel to that movie, regardless of what the lawyers say. The Jack Nicholson character is now Bryan Cranston. Sal, he's old. He has never given up on, I'm never going to stop partying. I just want to have a good time with my life. I own a bar that no one seems to go to, so I have no idea how he stays in business. He's a heavy alcoholic. He's a very outspoken atheist. And he's visited by Steve Carell, who played the role, who is Larry. He was the young kid from said movie, and they reference that, like, oh, he was in jail for a while.
Right. They do make a point of referencing it.
Yeah.
But this is one of the structural differences, that in the original, the characters are two Navy men who are escorting another junior seaman to the brig.
They knew each other ahead of time.
They knew each other in Vietnam, and in fact, Larry... Steve Carell's character was the only one who's in the Navy. The other two are Marines.
That's
which is
true.
Important.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And that in fact they weren't taking him to jail, but as we find out, and it's never quite expressed, and that's one of the core themes, we're never quite sure what it was, but he basically took the fall for something they all did.
Right. And now he's right. shown up out of nowhere. I mean, it's been so long, Bryan Cranston doesn't even recognize him, despite having been close with him. And they spend the night partying and drinking, and for it to be revealed that Carell had a son who was in the military and died in Iraq. And he just needs someone to go with him to go, basically, pick up the body.
And it is doom and gloom at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah, like, it's
hardcore.
Like, fuck.
And it just gets worse, and you're like, oh, my God.
But they're like, we got to make a visit on the way. So they drive out to middle of nowhere and meet up, go to a church where Lawrence Fishburne is the pastor, and he is apparently was the third member of their trio who has taken a very different...
former life.
Yeah, exactly. He was, like the monster or something like that. Because he was the biggest partier of them all, the mauler. And now, like I said, he's gone totally straight. He walks with a cane from old injuries that they reference here and there. And he is the one who's most reluctant to go with them on this little road trip because he's like, well, I got my thing here. And these guys were why I was bad. I don't want to.
He does not want to revisit that at all.
Exactly. Yeah. They're afraid. I understand that. There's people from my past I'm like scared to hang out with.
I don't want to go back there. Yeah.
I end up on a bridge somewhere, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to go back in with your closet.
Yeah, exactly.
Skeletons in the closet.
But they talk him into it with the help of his wife, who's like, oh, you better go help your friends.
Of course he had to go.
And so it turns into what Richard Linklater does very well, which is a conversational road trip film.
That's totally what this was. It was completely Richard's style. It was everything about how he always tells story. And it's, I don't know, you used the word languorous before in another review of another movie, but I think languorous in some ways fits here as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of words. There's a lot of words in this film.
It is wordy. Actually. But... you know,
but it makes sense that they have these, you know, theoretical conversations or philosophical conversations about things that are going on, and
there are differences, there are different points of view in life.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Bryan Cranston being the big talker of the group overall, who is trying to prod Larry Fishburne because he's into being the old, you know, the mauler again, like don't be this stick in the mud, and basically just trying having this sort of protective wing that he's not very good at, but he's still intentionist over Steve Carell's character.
Bryan Cranston embodied this guy, I think. I mean, I thought he was clearly just above everybody in his characterization of.
Well, it definitely shows the wide range that Steve Carell has of the types of roles he wants to take on.
Almost demure.
He's like
he disappears. I mean, the fascinating balance in the narrative here is that you have Bryan Cranston, who's the instigator.
Mm-hmm.
You have Lawrence Fishburne, who you know just has this wonderful sense of gravitas, and a guy who knows that he's always like an inch away from like he knows how bad he can be.
Yeah, yeah.
You're with Bryan Cranston though, and wanting to see him go off.
Yeah,
yep. You're totally.
You know, and he's the response.
You're like, take the red pill.
Even though all the way, the reason they're there is Steve Carell as Doc. You know, he's very low key in this. He almost hides, and then there's these moments where he says something and. He's quietly magnetic, and it's just these moments where you're just like, this is what this film is about. It's not about, do they, you know, they're almost fighting over, like, who's he going to be like? And he's just like, I'm already me. I'm not the guy you got into trouble 30 years ago. I've had a life. I know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm influencing you. And it's very quietly done. It's very, you know, it's a very subtle, you know, I don't think
people are going to expect it of him at all.
Oh, no. I mean, this is, you
know. Agreed.
Yeah, you know, particularly in the wake of Battle of the Sexes, where he was so big and boisterous. Yes. It's always been big. This is Steve Carell in a very low gear, but he's, you know, it's proved how good he is at that.
Exactly.
But he's never swallowed up by the other two performances. Nope. He's always in the background, and then suddenly it's like the camera just goes, boom, falls on him. You're like,
Gets to come up and both have those poignant scene puncturing moments to be the guy who interjects that, and to be the guy when the other two are fighting, to be the guy to actually put the needle in it and have the funny line, you know, at points. And it's all so deadpan with him that it actually, he works at doing both. Cause he's like, this is the most horrible time of his entire life. And yet he genuinely is enjoying spending time with these two old friends.
Yeah.
you know? It's such a, contrast of, you know, what the situation is and how he's actually, you know, enjoying it at the same time is, like, horrible.
And I feel like there's a specific reference to The Last Detail in terms of just not of this being a sequel, but just in spiritually to that, where they're ordered, when they decide to take the body with them, they have to take this very young Marine with them. and their sort of relationship with him as they're kind of, in a way, sort of kind of corrupting him on the way.
Yeah, totally.
Played by J. Quinton Johnston.
Yeah, he was. Wasn't he in Everybody Wants Some?
Yes.
So he's the only member of this cast, if I remember correctly, who Linklater's actually worked with before.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't remember who he said he got first of the big three, but when he was saying, oh, these are the other people I'm talking about, that each one was like, oh, God, I've always wanted to work with them. So the three guys were just really excited to get to work with each other. And it comes across. There's a magnificent kind of chemistry here that's not like any sort of chemistry you've seen before.
Yeah.
You know? It's- There's a tightness, a responsiveness. You can tell these guys are fully these characters, but they're all so incredibly different, and they're just after, as actors, such different things, but it all comes together for this magnificent, both touching and at times laugh-out-loud funny stew.
And also very political. This is Linklater's, arguably his first overtly political movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even then, it's kind of in a very Rick, quiet way, because it's not talking about particular political issues. It's talking about how we approach politics and the resonances between Vietnam and the Iraq War, and how we talk about war, why people go off to war, why they fight, what it means for them personally, not in kind of big conceptualized ways, but like, what does it mean when you big somebody who was in Vietnam and you go, you know, my son's gone off to a war that I'm not really 100% about. And this is set around the time that... Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, 2003.
It's very specifically timed when it is, and it's really fascinating to watch Linklater, you know, try and draw those resonances. And in a lot of ways, I think this is, particularly after Everybody Wants Some, which you know he's admitted was his last film about youth. I mean, he's not going to go back and do something like that again. This was a film about, you know, what it is to look back on a lifetime of experiences and the fact that you know a lot more and you've been through a lot more, but you don't necessarily still have all the answers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is a film about truth and honesty and big concepts, but channeled through very close interpersonal relationships.
True.
I think that's why it works so well.
And I think that's perfectly said about what this is.
Thank you. Well, it's basically what Rick told me. I got to interview him recently. Those are the themes we were talking about. And it's like, yeah, that's really what he's aiming for in here. And he really nails it.
I think so.
There's a lot of, like, that sort of comparing the anger they're feeling now towards the government that's still lying to their own people and to their own military about pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point of, like, lying about what happened to this kid in warfare, like the outrage over that. And then, of course, the very public, how much they lied to everyone and their own soldiers in the Vietnam War, that this is discussed at length, saying, like, man, the government just doesn't change, do they?
I like how all the three characters each have a different position on how to deal with that or how they think about it. Each character has a true position for it.
And they all have to confront a situation in which they have to tell a lie because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's really fascinating exploration of, like Richard said, truth and honesty and the various shades of like how you deal with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go to final thoughts. Richard, what do you think? Or should I say, Richard Linklater, what do you think?
I wish. The man's 57. He looks 10 years younger than me. This is undoubtedly his most mature film. I think it's the film where he best handles an ensemble of this size, because his early stuff was definitely kinetic, definitely bounced between people. You know, I have kind of a soft spot for Everybody Wants Some, because it's a baseball movie where nobody plays baseball. it was tonally and character-wise, a lot of people from a lot of different performances, not really always meshing. This is, this is leaps and bounds above that. This is one of his real top tier films. And Cranston is phenomenal. The only problem this film now has is who do they put in for the Oscars? I really think that when it comes to the Golden Globes, this is going to be very hard to beat for an ensemble piece, because he did something remarkable, which is take three actors at the height of their powers and write each of them at an equal level, but with really distinct approaches to the narrative. I think this is Rick's strongest film to date. Personally, for me, I think this is his most daring as a director and writer since Tape, So we're going back a few years.
Whoa.
Few years there. I
mean, like, he's all about that one.
Yeah, yeah. That's a movie nobody paid attention to when they should have been paying attention to that one instead of the one he put out the same year that was fucking terrible.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, oh, no, but it's big in Europe.
Huh?
It's Red Tape is still one of his big ones in Europe.
I remember we reviewed that like a month or something before. What is the other movie I'm thinking of? One of his animated ones that was just ridiculous and pedantic.
Scanner Darkly?
No. The one before that. But... like
Waking Life.
Waking Life. I was like, why isn't everyone talking about Tape? It's such the better film.
Well, everybody talks about Waking Life in Austin because pretty much if you could hold a pen, you ended up as an artist on it.
Yeah.
True. But no, I think this is by far Rick's strongest film. It's in a long while. It's personal. It's intimate. It's incredibly tightly scripted while still having his looseness and his sense of just people hanging out.
Yeah.
And talking about things, which I think few people do quite so well as him. Yeah, this is a good... For me, this is a good, solid, I'm going to go 8.5 out of 10 cellular plans.
I don't know. You're speaking words that are pretty much what I think about this film as well. So thank you saying words that elucidating. Work for me. Yeah, no, I know every time you go into a Rick film, there's a certain type of storytelling that he does that only he does that well, and it's usually languorous, it's usually philosophical, it requires you to think at the same time as you can sit back and enjoy it, but it's nice that you can have a movie that you can think about right now, because a lot of movies out there are full of angst, there's a lot of action films that are out there, which is great, because I love them, but it's nice to be able to sit and look at a character, see what a character is living and how they're experiencing things and having conversations about what the heck it all means.
Nobody in the Raid movie suddenly stops and goes, hold on. Do you remember when we were teenagers and we were fighting with knives?
Yeah.
Like, things were different back then, right?
Yeah. You know, and I'm no longer the young person that I once was. And so I'm pretty much squarely in these characters' camp of looking back and going, well, yeah, I have a lot more information now. And I totally get Sal's position when he's trying to corrupt the young people. Like, you know, come on in. The water's fine. You don't have to do everything that you're told. It's really going to be okay. And fuck them all, because...
You were always that way, though.
Okay, so maybe I was always that way. But it's okay to see other people bring the other young people into that. So I enjoyed it thoroughly. I love Rick's way of storytelling, and I think that everyone... I think this is... I don't know. I wonder how the world will... take this movie in. I don't know. I'm not really very eloquent today, but I don't know what the rest of the world will think about this, but I'm hoping that people enjoy it and will go see it because it's something that's different than everything else that's going on right now. And the storytelling is very well done. And yeah, all these men are fantastic.
Great performances across the board.
Yeah.
Just tremendous. Amazing.
So I'm going to give it a... I've been wavering on what I want to do, but it's a solid 8.5 sealed coffins.
You know, I think we're all on the same page here, although I'm kind of surprised y'all even went as low as 8.5. I think, especially you saying you think this is Linklater's best
film. That's because I'm giving Rick leeway, because I think whatever he's going to work on next, I think
it's going to be amazing. Gotta give even better.
This is just, I really think he's gone, this is an opportunity for me to become the guy who can move forward.
I mean,
after the Before trilogy and Boyhood, like he really, it's hard to think you're going to step up from that, but I think he's really going to.
I think that this movie isn't going to get the same level of acclaim from general audiences that perhaps Boyhood did, and that's a shame, because I actually think this is a better film.
By far.
And I know people love that, and I loved Boyhood,
but I love Boyhood too.
Like, you've watched him along the way really figure out his craft. Like, you try and compare this to the Before or whatever, Sunset movies, which are very entertaining. Well, the first two anyway. I'm not a fan of the third one, but very entertaining to watch. But they don't ever have the same level of poignancy and feeling of real people you're watching that this movie does. And this movie succeeds by its ability to not feel the need to go completely over the top. There's a subtlety.
Yeah.
There's a beauty that just feels like real life, but people you'd actually want to get to know in a sort of way. You know, these are guys that if they were older guys who lived in your neighborhood or friends of your dad, you'd be like, I love it when I get a chance to talk to them.
Yeah.
The performances, like I said, are so dead on. I really, really love this. I was surprised I loved it as much as I did. Maybe it's because I'm getting old, too. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I really loved it.
I've always been somebody to corrupt other people, too, so I don't know. Yeah. I definitely am more of a Sal than I am a Doc, or definitely not much of a Mahler.
The ending is very, very satisfying.
It is, completely. I walked out of this thing kind of like, you know, wet eyes, but not crying, but just in a sort of that sense of a weird sort of sense of inner peace after this. It was almost sort of zen-like watching this whole thing.
Yeah.
I loved it. I give it 9 out of 10 old slices of bar pizza. Because God knows, I have indeed woken up in a bar in the morning and gone for the pizza box that's been there since like 8 o'clock
on
previous night.
Let's be real.
WhatOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to WhatOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.